Hello, Greg Carl Wood. It is your longtime buddy and occasional co-host, Kyle Prindeville, coming to you from the home of the Batman shooting, Aurora, Colorado. I wanted to share a story with the listeners of THC, and that is I was so inspired by Greg Carl Wood's decision to pack up and leave St. Louis, Missouri, head west, and pursue a new life for himself. And my family and I have done so. We packed up everything in the car, went one way to Denver, and the whole reasoning is I happen to have Crohn's disease. I need cannabis as a medicine, as an alternative to pharmaceutical pills and horrible surgeries. So we left St. Louis, Missouri, where I could be locked in a cage as a criminal. So follow me on Twitter at KylePrindiville, and look for our crowdfunding campaign that's going to document in a video series our story and our journey out here. Peace.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Holy hell, Higher Side Chatters. Today we are getting weird. Drinking a little drink and smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and we're going for a piece of the conspiracy aggro crag today with a few of my favorite topics. Occult aspects of modern science, the possibility of some non-human entities steering the elite's agenda, and the idea of a hidden electromagnetic field of science that has been quarantined away from anyone with a mainstream scientific education, yet carefully passed down through the ages of secret societies and shadowy priesthoods. And then, of course, Saturn and its possible connections to all these things. I mean, what more could you want in a THC? I definitely have a lot of respect for today's guest, Anthony Patch. He's done a hell of a lot of research and was so kind to send me all of his books and several other pieces of material to go over. Made my job a lot easier, and I tried to hold my own, but good God, is a lot of this over my stupid stoner head. Although I love a guest that has a lot of great facts and is very knowledgeable about something, but will also dive deep into the world of speculation, into what some of this stuff might mean, in areas where we might never get the confirmation we would want to have. And we definitely hit that sweet spot today, so why make you wait any longer? CERN, Saturn, Strangelets, plane crashes, Tesla, the electric universe, and more, with your friend and mine, Anthony Patch. Alright people, today we're going to hone in on the crossroads between modern science and occult magic, because whether we're looking at Nazis, CERN, or NASA, or any of the other examples, the coded messages and secret symbols seem to suggest this connection is deeper than they'd like us to know, and today we're going to figure out why. To do that, we have a great researcher and author who has been laying out these conspiratorial breadcrumbs in his novels Covert Catastrophe and 2048 Diamonds in the Rough, like a modern-day George Orwell, and he's been studying this area more than anyone I know, and it's an honor and a pleasure. Anthony Patch, welcome to THC.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. I really appreciate the invitation to be with you today.
Yeah, this is really going to be awesome. I'm pumped for this one because you've been connecting some of my favorite conspiracy themes in a way that I think makes a lot of sense, most of which is centered around CERN, which is probably the best place to start. I'm sure most people listening have a layman's understanding of CERN and the Large Hadron Collider, but give us some of the introductory information that you think is important for people to know going into this.
Yeah, very quickly, I think people need to understand that this is the largest, most expensive machine that has ever been created by man, according to our present recorded history. Now, there may have been something, you know, back in what is often referred to as the Golden Age that was different, but essentially it lies 300 feet under the ground in Switzerland. And this is a device that was actually, they broke ground in 1954. And so it's been underway for about 60 years. 1998 is when they really started the public experiments that people have been following. And up until this point, They really haven't accomplished a whole lot, in my opinion, for all that money. So there's your start.
Right, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, there are some strange things about it. Like you said, it is the most powerful, largest machine that we know of that's ever been built. I mean, that is something to take note of. Apparently, inside the tunnel where they're doing this particle acceleration and collision, it's actually colder than outer space in there. And that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. Specifically within what they call the main ring. The main ring is the particle accelerator that gets all of the notoriety in the press. And it's 27 kilometers in diameter, and again, 300 feet below the surface of the Earth. And it spans across two borders, Switzerland and France. And the area that is the coldest is within the ring itself. Picture it as a hollow tube. They refer to it at CERN as the pipe. And within that area, they have magnets that are superconducting. And in order for them to be superconducting, they need to be cold, cryogenically cold with helium, down to almost absolute zero. And in fact, it is colder than outer space within the tubes of the main ring itself. In the tunnels are cold, of course, by merely their association with the pipe. But it's the pipe itself, the tube, the main ring, that is cryogenically cold.
And another big part of this puzzle to kind of understand what they're trying to do or what they talk about doing, which I guess are kind of two different things, is understanding the Higgs field. Can you kind of explain to us what the Higgs field is and how they're messing with it?
Yeah, the Higgs field, and again, I'll present everything in a paraphrased form, and I'm really trying to make it as simple and clear-cut for everyone, because this is pretty much arcane theoretical physics. And the Higgs field is a theoretical model of what is typically referred to as dark matter and dark energy. So if you picture everything in the universe that we can see and touch and measure as being matter, that's about 4% of the known universe. The remainder is comprised of what they theoretically called dark energy and dark matter. The Higgs field, if we go along the lines of that theory, is really much like a matrix. And again, we hear that name used a lot because of the movie, etc. But it is really a fabric or a weaving or a matrix of what are known as weakly interacting massive particles, or WIMPs. And these are weakly interacting at the nuclear level, at the quantum level. Their interaction as far as nuclear force, their bonding force, is very weak. And therefore, the Higgs field is, again, theoretically, capable of being opened or torn apart, much like a fabric is torn or the veil is parted.
Now, do these WIMPs have any connection to the strangelets we hear about?
They do in the sense that they're quantum particles. Again, quantum particles are smaller than atoms. They are actually the building blocks that make up an atom. And when you're talking about colliding particles and shattering them and particles spinning off, you're talking about quantum particles that are spinning off from the larger atoms or protons specifically that are being collided. And when we talk about strangelets, we talk about quantum particles and the Hadron Collider itself. We're talking about bosons, Higgs boson. The boson falls into a family or a category of bosons, one of which is the Higgs boson, and therefore the Higgs field. And then strangelets are in there with it. Strangelets are a combination of two quantum particles. One is a quark and one is a gluon. And these bind together to form what are known as strangelets. And I'll try to keep my answers short. So when I stop, that's just an indication to you that I'm not going to run off at the mouth here.
Right on. And these strangelets are concerning, though, to a lot of people, especially in the conspiracy circles. They have some qualities that seem like they could be pretty epic and pretty dangerous to be messing with, right?
They are. When we talk about quantum particles, again, we are speaking of theoretical behaviors and theoretical possibilities. So what I'm quoting to you comes from the scientific journals.
Right.
I take all of my information from their sources. And again, their source you have to define as being theoretical in most cases. So the characteristics of strangelets. Number one, it is considered to be the most powerful explosive force in the known universe. And I'll explain that in just a moment. The other characteristic is that I call them the cousin of the black hole. They're the cousin to black holes because they exhibit much the same types of characteristics as black holes. Most people, when they think of a black hole, they think of it sucking in all matter, including light. The quark gluon condensate, or strangelet, also attracts matter. It does not attract light, but it does attract matter, other atoms to it. A strangelet also has the third characteristic akin to a black hole in that it is so heavy and so dense that it will penetrate out of the ALICE detector at the Large Hadron Collider where they're produced, through the floor, through the Earth, and come to rest at the center of the Earth. And there they can begin to attract other matter, other atoms to themselves. So those are the three quick overview characteristics.
So, yeah, I mean, this is definitely something to pay attention to, theoretical as it might be. These experiments, the things we're talking about, you really only have to mess up once. And the whole Earth could collapse on itself in a worst-case scenario. The universe could unfold. A Big Bang could be created, you know, in Switzerland, which is probably not the best place for a Big Bang to occur. Yeah, I mean, this is some serious, crazy power we're talking about.
Yes, indeed. And oftentimes people get hung up on hearing about things like, well, when the collisions occur, there are tera electron volts, 13 TeV being produced, and that we have these huge magnetic forces that are involved. And we can get into discussing all of those to define them, but this machine is extremely powerful. And I don't really want people to get dissuaded or led off on another path of listening to the scientists who are saying things like, oh, we've got it all under control, and yet at the same time, out the other side of their mouth, admit that there are two things that they're trying to achieve. One, create microscopic black holes, and number two, interdimensional portals. And that's all out in the public venue.
Yeah, and the interdimensional portal piece is such a fascinating piece. But before we dive too much into that, I wanted to ask you about the idea that this equipment might have electromagnetic or gravitic effects on the nearby environment or the Earth in that area. This is something I've heard you talk about a little bit recently. It ties into potentially current events. Is this something that should be a concern?
Well, I think it should be. When we talk about CERN, I like to talk about the fact that things are occurring below at the quantum level, at the microscopic level, if you will, and also below the Earth. But there are things that are occurring above ground and outside the Earth itself. So specific to the magnets do have a gravimetric effect upon the Earth itself. We'll just talk about the mantle and the Earth's crust. But it also has a direct effect upon our magnetosphere, or as I often like to call it, our shields that protect us from gamma rays and X-rays coming in from the cosmos. So there is a distortion that is readily visible on the satellites that monitor and the computer modeling that monitor our magnetosphere and our magnetopause. And those shields are being affected. They're being changed. The shape, the morphology of those shields are being changed. Every time we see the powering up of the superconducting cryogenically cold magnets residing 300 feet below the Earth.
So, yeah, it seems like CERN could definitely, and what they're doing there could definitely be having an effect on the Earth. Do you think it has any connection to the recent Germanwings crash, perhaps? I've heard you talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, I've really couched my statements regarding that because it moves into the realm of legal issues as to what I say. And I don't want to, delve into that. But I do think that there's a theory that gravimetric waves could have an effect upon the avionics, the control systems and instruments of aircraft. But the reason that I don't think that this is the case with the Germanwings Airbus 320 that went down is because it was the only aircraft that went down. There were many other aircraft, including other Airbus 320s that were in the area and none of them were affected by a widespread gravimetric wave that passed through the Alps. And therefore, I think that there is that effect upon the Earth that is being spawned by the magnets at CERN, but I don't believe that that's connected to this aircraft going down.
Yeah, a lot of researchers are looking at this aircraft, and they seem to think that the wreckage is more consistent with something that is scattered about, came apart in the air, and littered the area rather than wreckage from an impact.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating. I guess I've heard you mention that one possibility is something that other researchers talk about is directed energy weapons.
Right. Now, again, I'm speaking hypothetically. I'm not accusing anyone. I'm not certainly not accusing anyone with a Large Hadron Collider. There is the theory that a directed energy weapon in the form of a more specifically defined kinetic energy weapon may have been used to disintegrate this aircraft because the wreckage is in such small particles and the bodies have been so basically pulverized beyond what you normally see in an aircraft impact with the Earth, that it appears to me that there was an outside force that was used. People talk about directed energy weapons, and really what oftentimes they're talking about or referring to are lasers. What I'm referring to are actual accelerated particles, perhaps protons, perhaps other subatomic particles, that are accelerated in a particle accelerator and then used to direct those particles towards a target in which the impact is destroyed, the target is destroyed, simply based upon the mass and the speed of the particles themselves without any explosive being used. And this is common. This is out there. This is not science fiction.
Yeah, and I guess one thing that backs this up is there was a witness who said they heard explosions that took like 8 seconds apiece, which might back up the idea that it was some exotic weapon like this.
Yeah, and I cited that there was a gentleman in one of the villages nearby the impact area who heard two distinct 8 second long explosions before the aircraft went down. So that's where it really started me towards the direction of thinking of directed energy weapons. But again, I have no way of proving that. And I'm certainly not accusing anyone or any agency of using one of those. It just, from a physics standpoint, appears that that's what caused the destruction of the aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, and it is, of course, speculation, but have you gone down the rabbit hole enough to come up with a potential motivation for taking out this particular aircraft? Was there anyone on board that's of note?
Well, there was a... I don't have my notes in front of me. Yvonne, I forget her last name. Maybe you can help.
Yvonne Selke.
Selke, thank you. She was on board, and she was working for a defense contractor for, I think it was 23 years. And they were essentially a mapping agency that was mapping out gravimetric waves that we just spoke of, as well as they do remote Earth sensing visually and electronically for in support of our troops. And she was a contractor with Bose Allen Hamilton, a longtime defense contractor. Again, I have nothing against them or against her, but she was on board en route to Dusseldorf. And in the day and age of whistleblowers, we begin to start thinking in the conspiratorial lines that someone of note on board an aircraft that is taken out or goes down accidentally raises our suspicions.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. And the real data is, of course, going to be covered up, and it's going to be hard to ever really get to the facts, but it's not inconsistent with a lot of other situations similar to this. And also, one last bullet point on that is I believe there was a guy who stepped down who worked for that same agency just a week before the plane crash. I mean, it could be coincidence, but it also might be something else to fuel the fire.
It could be, and again, I don't hold anything against or saying anything negative against this gentleman. I forget his name because I don't have my notes, but he was actually the undersecretary for defense, I think was his position. A week prior, he resigned. He was essentially in a position of oversight of most of our intelligence agencies, including the agency that Yvonne Selke was working with, was contracted to work with. So, yeah, there's a timing of coincidence as to his resignation and, you know, her death. I don't know that the two are related. I don't know that she was necessarily carrying any information negative to him or the agencies. But, again, it's just coincidental, but there are no coincidences in life, as we all have learned and experienced.
Yeah, yeah, well said. And, of course, we'll probably never know for sure, but I think you can make a strong case. In fact, a lot of alternative news sites have been logging a whole bunch of strange deaths. We had one string that was a bunch of high-level bankers, but also a long series of sudden deaths and suicides from top-level scientists. And when you consider what's happening on the cutting edge of science, in a lot of ways, this is the apex of the shadowy elite's agenda, it doesn't surprise me that some people would start getting knocked off.
Well, it does concern me, too, and I do pay attention to those reports. Even though my head is buried in physics, I do try to pay attention to the rest of the world and world events that are going on. And it does concern me when we see a pattern of even astrophysicists and astronomers going back to the whole discussion of Planet X and Nibiru and the approach and the timing of it and the observations. And, you know, people that are trying to report their observations are being taken out. That's just disastrous.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. Okay, so another big thing I wanted to talk to you about, it's really exciting to me, is this connection between CERN and Saturn. It's fascinating to me, and it ties in the Electric Universe model and the Thunderbolts project, which is really out there, but I just love it. And it might be new to a lot of people. So can you give us a little bit of background there as to what this model is?
It truly is out there. I mean, when I reached this conclusion from a physics standpoint, I thought I was losing my mind. I really did. I mean, I thought, okay, you've really gone over the edge on this one. Here's the sequence of events. I was looking at the physics with CERN. I was looking at a number of things in the cosmos that were going on. And I was looking at the ancient Sumerian writings, Babylonian art, things like that. And it became apparent to me that what CERN, the people that are promoting the project at CERN, beyond the physicists and the engineers, the folks that are really behind this, and I call this the nefarious agenda, are using occult practices, which we'll get into in a minute, but looking at the occult connections between CERN and the planets. And it became apparent to me that they were trying to reestablish some form of physical connection, or at least at a minimum, a line of communication with Saturn. And then I came across the Thunderbolts project. It was not the other way around. I had heard about the Thunderbolts project and the Electric Universe theory, but I had never gone to their site and really dug into it. Turns out one of the original founding members of Thunderbolts project lives 2 miles from my house.
Huh.
And we have a meeting next week set up to discuss this theory of mine, because they have not put together, to my knowledge, they've not put together the connection between the Large Hadron Collider and Saturn itself. So we're going to have a meeting of the minds next week.
That's exciting.
Well, I'll update you on that. And if you want, I'll elaborate on my theory a little bit here, if you want me to go on with it.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. Essentially, what it looks like is there is a attempt to establish what are known as Birkeland currents. These are electrical fields, two electric charge fields, that arrange themselves in a twisted or helical fashion, comprised of a electric plasma. And it appears to me that they are trying to project Birkeland currents to the southern pole of Saturn in the form of a twisted helix, a plasma conduit is what I call it, establishing a plasma, electric plasma conduit between the southern pole of Saturn and CERN itself. And the purpose of this, and again, this is where it gets really strange, if it isn't strange already, there are demonic entities, according to the occult, according to ancient writings. There are demonic entities that reside within the gaseous body of Saturn, and it is their agenda. This is not me. This is their material that I'm reading. it is their agenda to free those entities and bring them back to our plane of existence, to our world. And they will do that through a conduit established at the southern pole of Saturn.
Man, I love this. And it does tie in a lot of different aspects, a lot of different threads in the conspiracy realm. So when I first heard you talking about this, I was like, wow, this could be the deepest depths of the rabbit hole. And as far out as it might seem, to double back just a little bit to the electric universe model, the premise or the idea is that electricity is a lot bigger part of our fundamental makeup of the universe than we are taught. And the reason why Saturn of all planets is because maybe in our previous age, this golden age, Saturn might have played a much bigger role in creating our environment, right?
That is correct. I can tell you've done your homework. I commend you.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. In what was known as the Golden Age, which predates the Sumerian times and the Babylonian times, predates the flood in biblical times, the theory again, or the writings of the occult practitioners that carry forward to this day in their existence and practices, was that there was an alignment of three planets that were in close proximity to Earth. The first closest was Mars. The next was Venus. And then behind that in a straight line, if you picture this line extending up from the Earth, was Saturn itself. And Saturn was so close and so large that it actually blotted out most of the sun, or obscured most of it except the rim of the sun. And therefore, you have ancient carvings that depict this alignment in close proximity of the three planets to Earth, and thus establishing an electrical plasma connection between those three aligned planets and the surface of the Earth itself, and thereby creating a lot of the images that we see in stone carvings and paintings and whatnot that depict what are really, according to Thunderbolt's project, not necessarily gods or entities that are alive, but actually plasma configurations, the radiating of plasma fields, the shapes and the morphologies of different plasma energies that are seen, in particular the plasma conduit that is connecting those three planets with the Earth, including Saturn.
Man, it is tough to imagine like what the environment might have been, but From what I understand from looking at the material, it seems like there was some type of envelope or cocoon that almost encapsulated the whole planet. It was almost like an environment that was more stable around the whole globe, rather than these being changing seasons of extreme heat and extreme cold. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. Because you have essentially the relationship of Saturn to the Earth such that you are blocking most of the energy from the sun. And the time of day is presented as crescent shapes of the sun rather than crescent shapes of the phases of the moon. Picture the crescent shapes of the sun as it peaks around at different quadrants of the clock around Saturn. And therefore, you do have a change in the seasons. In fact, during that golden age, our atmosphere was much denser, higher in concentrations of oxygen, and warmer. And therefore, you see the promoting of things that we would call giants in terms of dinosaurs and also perhaps even the Nephilim themselves.
Right. And this is so fascinating because this could really be a component to why, you know, because if you get into the science of electricity and understanding the way electricity works, you could start stumbling upon ideas like we're talking about now, and this seems to be fundamental knowledge that some of these shadowy puppet masters and secret societies have wanted to keep quiet for so long. Mm-hmm. It also gets into mythology, of course, because all the planets are named after gods, and
that's right.
It starts to get into this weird territory because we have all this sun worship that cropped up at a time, but you know, were they talking about Saturn? Were they talking about the sun? It gets really weird, but mm-hmm. I guess there are some clues within mythology that this could have been the case, right?
Absolutely there are, and I think if we put on a different pair of glasses, so to speak, and we begin to look at the universe through electric glasses rather than the gravimetric glasses that we have been taught, that is based upon Einstein's theory of the universe. All of our mathematics, all of our modeling of the universe, and all of our modeling of physics and how things at the quantum level behave are based upon a gravity model. However, if you flip that over and use a different set of glasses and look at it as far as the effects of electricity, the movement of electrons, and the movement of accelerated particles, the world and the universe looks entirely different than what we accept as the truth today, when in fact Einstein and Tesla in their later years said openly in the public and were ignored, saying, we're wrong. It's not gravity. It's electricity.
Right. And that's, again, an interesting component, because when you look through history of things that have been covered up, one of the greatest scientists who focused on electricity, Tesla, he's been one of the most buried scientists, one of the most suppressed guys out there. Also, the UFO field and the technology for crafts seems to be in this electromagnetic realm. The Nazi Bell apparently was going into this realm. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at all the major themes of things that have been buried, it seems to be this knowledge of electricity in our universe. We channel it into these wires and put it in everybody's homes, and we consider that to be all electricity is. But clearly our environment is very highly charged and electrical. We have lightning. It's out there.
Yeah, and if you go to I always think of as above, so below. Go back out to the cosmos. All of the planets communicate with each other through electricity. When we see things like comets, the tail of a comet, what we are seeing is actually the electrical plasma interaction between a nearby planetary or star that a comet is passing by. So if you picture a comet passing by our sun, as it comes into close proximity to the sun, it's not the gravity so much that is affecting and creating a tail in a comet. It is actually the electrical fields of positive, negative, attracting one another and drawing electrical plasmas off of the comet itself. There's an interaction. And I'll give you another example. We see on the moon and other moons and heavenly bodies what we have always thought of as asteroid or meteorite impacts causing craters on the surface of the moon. Some of that is, yes, impacts. Most of it is plasma. Most of it is the actual arcing between heavenly bodies that are causing these dimples or these craters in the surface of these bodies like the moon or even asteroids themselves. Picture a carbon arc welder, a stick of carbon. And when he strikes an arc, if you look at that with a microscope, it looks just like the surface of the moon.
Wow. That's some crazy stuff. You know, your whole life, you go through school and you're taught all about how the universe works and all this stuff. And this whole area is completely left out. It's kind of fascinating that more physicists, more people who go into these fields don't just stumble upon this information. It's kind of amazing how they can quarantine it and no one wanders into that realm.
And yet, if you look at the occult, if you look at the ancient practitioners of spiritual energies and electric energy, they were using it in the ancient times. And I can cite things like the pyramids in Egypt, but for the purpose of focusing, I think if you look at the physics that we know of that we've learned in school as the cover story, the true occult practitioners are using electricity, and they're using electricity to manipulate the spirit world. And in fact, the Large Hadron Collider, if you were to talk to most of the physicists and engineers there, they'd say, oh, no, we hold to the gravity model. We don't hold to the electric model of the universe. And yet the people that are behind their funding and dictating the agenda of how this machine's going to be used, its ultimate purpose, it's all about electricity. And so right. If we talk about tera electron volts that are being generated at time of collision of particles moving near the speed of light, we are producing electrical fields from these collisions. But we're also producing huge gravity waves, which are also part of the electric universe, because anytime you accelerate a particle through an electrical field, you generate magnetic energy. So the guys that are pushing the agenda, they're using the electricity, and this is where the physics led me to them establishing the Birkeland Current electric plasma conduit connection to the southern pole of Saturn.
Right. And man, obviously the Saturn symbolism has been coded into our culture everywhere through Hollywood, the black cube we see at so many different places, which is apparently a symbol of Saturn. Why Saturn and not, say, Jupiter or Mars? Of course, we're going in with the line that it's because there are some entities that are somehow locked in there or reside there. But do we know why they would reside inside Saturn or on Saturn as opposed to another planet?
Well, Saturn and Jupiter are very much connected to one another electrically, physically, but they're also connected spiritually, and also from the ancients of the, you know, the relationships of gods and their spinoff, their family, if you will. And so I haven't really explored Jupiter in the sense of whether there are entities residing there. I've stopped with Saturn because if I go any further, I'll probably just lose my mind. But just looking at the writings and the occult practices alone, it is clearly evident that they believe that there are entities in Saturn and that it is a much like a prison planet. And so I can't really speak to the other planets except to say that they are part of the same family. There are, you know, husbands and wives and cousins and children and all of that in the ancient mythologies connected with the planets. But there is, from a biblical standpoint, the idea that Saturn is Elysium. There was a movie that came out with Jodie Foster, you know, somewhat akin to that. But Elysium, spelled with an E, is Saturn. And in that description of Saturn, it is a prison planet, as well as the bottomless pit, the Earth, having its own share of demonic entities, hell, for example, residing within the Earth itself. It appears to me that there is going to be a joining of forces, that the forces that are trapped in Saturn will be brought to join up with the forces that are in the bottomless pit. And I'm sure you've heard of CERN and the LHC referred to as the key to the bottomless pit. And in Revelation, they talk about opening the bottomless pit and the scorpions and other entities coming up out of the bottomless pit.
Yeah, it gets into some creepy territory for sure. And something I was just considering, you know, in ancient times, of course, whether we're talking about the Bible, the Nag Hammadi texts, any mythology, it seems like they're talking about many gods, many beings. It seems like communication with entities was a much more regular thing. You read the Bible and miracles are happening, angels are appearing. There seems to be a lot more paranormal activity just in general. And then you come, you know, you're in 2015 with a boring 9-to-5 reality and nothing weird ever seems to happen in your little bubble of control. And I'm curious, I wonder if the reason why this contact was so much more prevalent or seemed to be is because of our actual closer proximity to Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm totally convinced of it.
Wow. Man, so can you talk to us a little bit more about Saturn's poles? Because I think there's some things about the poles and their connection to CERN that are pretty fascinating.
That's a great question. Many of your audience may have seen the video and the images, the GIFs of the northern pole of Saturn. The northern pole of Saturn, if you were to look down upon it and then overlay a schematic for a synchrotron particle accelerator, and you were to look at specifically the shape of several of the detectors within the Large Hadron Collider, which is a large synchrotron particle accelerator, you would notice that the hexagonal shape is identical and that the movement of the clouds at the northern pole of Saturn, contra-rotating clouds, one spinning in one direction within and an outer ring spinning in an opposite direction, is exactly the same thing as what is occurring in the main ring of the Large Hadron Collider with two opposing contra-rotating streams of particles of protons that then collide, which then generate synchrotron energies. The Large Hadron Collider is a mimic of, a model of, a replication of the northern pole of Saturn.
Man, just it gets weirder and weirder.
You got a weird guy on the line here you're talking to. But to go back to the physics for just a moment, the northern pole, let's picture it as a synchrotron Large Hadron Collider. The southern pole is a spiral, and that is the opening. Connecting the two are Birkeland currents, the electric universe. You have synchrotron energies that are generated at the north and then are transmitted through the core of the gaseous planet. It doesn't have a solid core, but it picture a conduit, a twisted helix, looks identical to the human DNA helix that goes from the northern pole to the southern pole, and then it will exit through the southern pole, the spiral, much like the Norway spiral that we saw when CERN was fired up at the time that the president received the Nobel Peace Prize. And you have the same spiral that is being generated. That spiral will extend from the Earth in the form of that twisted helix to match up with the spiral at the southern pole of Saturn. They're identical.
Wow. And so when you're looking at Saturn, of course, one of the other big features of it are the rings. Are the rings, do they come into this at all?
No, the rings are much like what you see from the Large Hadron Collider when you're talking about gravimetric waves. What you're seeing of the rings is really nothing more than a physical manifestation of the electrical or the synchrotron energies that are given off by the northern pole of Saturn. So they are generating electricity on Saturn that spins out in the form of rings that, because they're magnetic, because of the movement of particles, as I said, through an electric field, causes a magnetic or gravitational, if you will, but a magnetic force that brings in matter from around the planet. So the rings are an extension of the synchrotron that is operating on the planet of Saturn itself. So it's sucking in debris because you have a band of magnetic energy that is created by the synchrotron effects at the northern pole.
Wild stuff. Now, I've also heard you talk about this in the context of Jacob's Ladder, which is really what we are talking about, and that this is a story about a similar type of plasma conduit. Do you think that's what they were trying to write about?
Yes. It's often referred to as the coming and goings of angels. These are not the nice angels that we want to think about. These are the comings and goings of spiritual demonic entities that the occult believe that they can attract back to this planet. So it'll be a form of communication. It's perhaps a two-way conduit, but more importantly, it's a one-way conduit in the beginning.
Yeah. Man, I love this area, especially when we're talking about non-human entities, because it seems like it's more and more apparent to me going down this rabbit hole that at the top of the pyramid, there's a powerful non-human influence. I mean, we've seen plenty of cryptic symbols and rituals over the years. We know that these secret societies go back as far as written history, and they've always been communicating with or taking orders from something. I mean, whether you say it's aliens, demons, fallen angels, reptilians, or even some archons is the new term people like. But to me, it's all a different way to express the same kind of concept. I mean, maybe these beings are playing the long game. Maybe they've given these dark priesthoods the tools like fractional reserve banking and the court system and all these tools of control in exchange for, well, to put them in a position to where they actually have amassed enough power and resources to even build a portal maker like CERN. I mean, that could be their end game. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the old motif of making a deal with the devil.
It is the end game. And let's go back to Tesla for a moment. Tesla readily admitted in the beginning of his life and his research, he was communicating with what he considered to be the good guys, the good entities, and he was receiving information for the good purposes. But he admitted that in his latter part of his life, he turned to the dark side. and he began to receive information from entities that wanted to change him from a person who was trying to help humanity to one that was trying to create weapons. What we see leaping forward to today in the Large Hadron Collider is an extrapolation of all of the research of Tesla that he received from the dark entities.
Yeah, it's almost like our scientists are in some form of possession by these entities, and they're just tinkering away trying to manifest their will. The part that's fuzzy for me in understanding some of this is why non-physical beings would have a physical location like Saturn.
Yeah, and it's fuzzy for me too, because I'm not a practitioner of the occult, and I try not to go too far into that, only to see the surface of it and see what their intentions are, what they're willing to talk about. Because I'm right there with you. It's pretty fuzzy. Why would they be imprisoned there in the first place and not on, and just on Earth, the Earth itself? And perhaps there are people in the audience that can send you information about that, because I haven't, and I choose not to go much deeper into the occult because of that. So I can't give you a ready answer. I can only say I've made some connections in physics. I've looked at some of the ancient, you know, practices, and I've looked at the theory of the electric universe, and it makes sense to me.
Oh, me too. And maybe we can detail a couple of those occult connections you've seen in terms of CERN. Of course, a lot of people have been talking about the strange dance ritual they did. A lot of people talk about the Shiva statue. Are there any other things you've seen in the subtext of what they're doing there that, you know, makes the occult connections more obvious?
Have you run across the Hebrew and the Sanskrit writings or parchments that are on display behind plates of glass at CERN?
No, I think that's new to me.
I'll send you some photographs of that, but basically you have ancient Hebrew and Sanskrit writings on parchment and animal skins that are preserved between plates of glass, and they're on display, that's in public display, in fact, at CERN. And these talk about things like bringing back the former gods, bringing back the former spirits, the year of light, the age of illumination, all of the things that we see going on right now in terms of the Illuminati are reflected in these writings. And these are carryovers from other areas of writing, such as Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons and JPL, and all of these origins to our programs such as NASA and other scientific endeavors that all have their core foundations, their germinations, coming from the occult practices. Right down the line, every area of science, whether we're talking human DNA or hard physics, but right to the Large Hadron Collider, we have, you know, occult practices throughout and symbolism throughout. If you look at the shape of the detectors from the end on, when they have a detector that's open, you see photographs of the Large Hadron Collider. They're usually showing you the detectors. These are hexagonal and octagonal shaped structures from an end view, if you were to slice it open. And these have replications over to the Hindu god Shiva that you see the statue of, but they also have replications out to the northern pole of Saturn in its hexagonal shape. You see the shapes, which are geometric, which are mathematical, and mathematics is tied into the occult. Numerology, lots of people are, you know, familiar with the numerology in terms of the spiritual world, and everything that is built at Saturn is built up mathematically to be tied into the ancient practices of the Tower of Babel and the conjuring of spirits and the opening of ancient portals using mathematics and the geometric shapes of the machines or the tower itself back in the ancient times.
Man, now if this portal was open, would you suspect this is something we could see with our eyes? I mean, we kind of saw the Norway spiral. I mean, it looked very odd, but we did see something.
If we are still alive, and if we are still here to witness it, then we will see, you know, everybody's seen the northern lights. So let's just picture the northern lights for a moment, the Aurora Borealis. Picture that but multiplied 1,000-fold, 100-fold, whatever it's going to be. But it will be an electric aurora borealis-type display between Saturn and the Earth that will be visible to everyone on the planet because of the electrical discharge effects that will take place. And this was visible, as you've seen in the pictures that you've noted in the Electric Universe, the same visible plasma conduit that existed in the Golden Age was visible to ancient man, will likewise be visible to us here on Earth in the modern times.
Wow, that would be crazy to see. Now, when we look at ancient structures like the pyramids, we notice certain alignments to celestial bodies, and CERN might not need to be aligned in a similar way, but is there anything about its position or maybe the times that it's at peak performance that coincide with our position in the solar system, or really anything that can help us make this a stronger case that there is a Saturn connection?
That's fascinating you bring that up, because Tuesday I had a conversation with my good friends at End Times Matrix News, Chris and Tim. Chris is extremely knowledgeable in the ancients. Unbelievable how she keeps the family trees all in order. But I really encourage people to go to End Times Matrix News and listen to, go to the YouTube channel, go to my, you know, website. The same conversations are on my website. We have spent hours and hours and hours talking about all this stuff. And I'm not trying to take your audience away from you, Greg. No. I'm just saying that there's another resource for people. The ancients, Egypt, if we are talking about planetary alignments, Tuesday in our conversation, at the very end, we opened up a new rabbit hole. And we are presently researching this rabbit hole that has to do with the alignments of the Large Hadron Collider, the pyramids in Egypt, to be specific to pyramids, and also UC Berkeley, the Bay Area specifically. And I'll get into that in a moment. The alignment that we're looking at, if you were to look at a graphical representation of the Large Hadron Collider, looking down on it from above and looking at the main ring, you will see the four main detectors that are positioned around the ring. And what we are looking at is September 13th through the 23rd, 24th, 25th. September 13th as a starting point for a possible alignment of one of the detectors. We think it's going to be ALICE, the ALICE detector, being in alignment with the North Star, Polaris, which is in Ursa Major, the Big Dipper. And this is all in my first book, Covert Catastrophe, but I'm going to give you the thumbnail sketch. Mm-hmm. But I'll stop for a moment if you want to interject, and then I'll pursue that a little further.
Well, that timing is really interesting because it does coincide with, I believe, a time that they're going to be trying to ramp up the experiment. We talked about TEVs mm-hmm. and how strong the signal can be, and apparently they're trying to reach a new peak right in that late September, mm-hmm. mid-September window, right?
Absolutely. What they're doing in late May, early June, they will begin collisions and they will achieve 13 tera electron volts, TeV. That's using protons to collide with one another. In September, they will switch to ions of lead, much heavier and denser than protons. And with those collision of heavier particles in September, early September, they will be achieving 14 plus tera electron volts. 14 is what the niobium titanium superconducting magnets are capable of controlling. They cannot produce any power higher than 14 TeV. They have to switch over to niobium tin, and there will be a 3-year shutdown that will, you know, entail that. But not to digress too far. Yes, 14 TeV, early September, they will be continuing the same power level through until almost Christmas, colliding particles of lead. And that does coincide with a number of things that I call coalescing of events. There's a coalescing of a lot of things happening in early September and all the way through September, spiritually, religiously, physics-wise, cosmology-wise. The timing is pointing to September, and the issue with the alignments that you started with is that I believe we will see the ALIS detector where strangelets are produced, coinciding and pointing to, in a triangulated fashion, to the northern star in Ursa Major, drawing out a triangle from the North Star to the Giza Pyramid, and then over across the baseline to UC Berkeley, and back out through from UC Berkeley, where they have a synchrotron particle accelerator, back through the Golden Gate Bridge in alignment with Ursa Major in September, possibly the 13th of September.
Man, that is interesting. So are there any other aspects to the Berkeley connection outside of the alignment that make it a player in this little conspiracy?
There are multitudes, and that's where I started my books, because I went to UC Berkeley. I grew up in the Bay Area. I was growing up and going through college in the middle of Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, the Human Genome Project in Walnut Creek, next door to the city of Lafayette, where I grew up, which is next door to Berkeley, where I went to school. And Berkeley is loaded, and the whole Bay Area is loaded with occult symbology. Let me give you one direct connection between Berkeley and the Large Hadron Collider, and that is the ESnet-5, the Energy Systems Network. That is Internet 2. There are 160 laboratories around the world that are connected to CERN by way of this Internet system, fiber optic, 100 gigabytes per second throughput, I think is it. But anyway, Berkeley is the hub of ESnet-5, the distribution of data coming out of CERN and connecting 160 other laboratories, most of which have particle accelerators. And the hub of that Internet system between the laboratories is controlled at UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you... Do you want the significance of why they're the hub?
Absolutely.
Okay, two things. One, it's the occult center for everything that's going on scientifically in the world. Berkeley and the Bay Area, where the Silicon Valley is located, Google, Ames Laboratory, NASA, Lockheed, everything that is going on in the physical occult world is happening in the Bay Area. And this is new information you're getting out of me today. Okay?
Hmm.
I haven't presented this on any of the other shows I've been on.
Wow.
Now, the physics standpoint, if you will, is the control of the distribution system at Berkeley, the hub, is there because it's in physical proximity to Google and physical proximity to D-Wave Corporation. I hope I don't get sued for this. But D-Wave Corporation is the manufacturer of the adiabatic quantum computer. The latest model is the 2048, which is part of my title of my book. Model 2048 came out a couple of weeks ago, well, actually about 3 months ago. It has the equivalent processing power of 7 billion human brains, and it is artificially intelligent. That's connected to Berkeley, the hub, the ESnet-5, interlinking the 160 laboratories around the world directly to the Large Hadron Collider. And that's new information.
And damn, that is quite a serious connection. Wow, man. So, yeah, I guess a lot of countries are invested in CERN. I mean, a lot of them are involved, but how many people could really be in the know about this secret agenda?
Well, I always say that the physicists and the scientists, I hold no ill will towards any of those people. In fact, I really feel sad for them because they have been deceived. They have bought into the grand deception of the New Age movement that what they truly believe, they are doing positive humanitarian work, and that they are going to promote the ascension of man to a higher level of evolution, to a higher level of existence, and that they are going to recreate the Garden of Eden here on this earth, that they're going to terraform this earth, and they are going to change man, and that we are going to eliminate war and poverty and all the other ills of our life through the work that they're doing to open the portal and bring in what they believe to be benevolent ancestors from the stars. They believe that we are products of panspermia, that we are going to be helped by our ancestors to achieve a higher level of existence of peace and nirvana.
How wrong they are. Yeah, and that's another great element of this whole thing is since the 60s, since the 40s, really, since Roswell, people have been talking about the secret space program is just a couple of decades ahead of us, and what they have is way more advanced than what we have, but we're kind of getting to the apex here where the secret technologies are spilling out into the mainstream, but they're just lying about what they're there for, and as the end game approaches, they're getting way more bold about being like, I don't care if you know what we're doing, like, we're doing it. We're already here. We're at the finish line.
That's right, and I think we need to look at September. There's going to be a lot happening between now and September. A lot happening. But I really think we need to look at September as their time frame, their marker, as to absolutely incredible things that are going to happen that I will encapsulate down to just saying, I think that's when they're going to open the portal.
Yeah, I mean, September's been a big deal in the past. We know that. Also, a lot of researchers talk about the equinoxes, and we're probably getting to, you know, some type of the fall equinox, I believe, is somewhere in there. But it's interesting. Definitely a time to watch. But wow, man, we've been all over the map. I guess that does it for us. I could do it all day, but I really do love the electric universe theory and the Saturn tie-in. I think you're really on to something, man. But before I cut you loose, would you like to tell the people where they can follow up on your work and also get your books, which thanks for sharing those with me. That they're awesome, and fiction, of course, is a great way to get complex concepts across, and that's what your books do, and they do a great job, so I do appreciate that, too. I had a good time with them, but definitely let the people know a little bit more.
Okay, well, thank you. My website is Anthony Patch. That's P-A-T-C-H, anthonypatch.com. You can buy my books through there. The two novels are $5 a piece. I'm not making a bunch of money on this. It just helps defray some of my costs. And the first part of my companion book of science is $2, and the other two parts will be coming out soon. I have been blocked on Facebook this week. My Facebook pages were Anthony Patch as well as Tony Patch. I'm now available at James, my middle name, James Patch. So Facebook, I'll rebuild everything as I have time on Facebook. It's just crazy.
Yeah. But
they're going after me right now. And for the time being, I still have a YouTube channel, which is Anthony Patch. And all of my interviews with End Times Matrix News and other venues such as the Higher Side Chats are all available on there. I really appreciate it if people will purchase the books and support what I'm doing, but I'm not in it for the money. That's not my mission in life. And the other part is the books themselves, because they are novels, I consider them to be a buffet of topics. Mm-hmm. Much of what we've touched on today, they were written with an audience in mind or a readership in mind that has not been exposed to the things that you and I are talking about today. And if it piques their interest, that they would then pursue down the rabbit holes of interest to them on their own. So they're not an in-depth study on these subjects. They are simply an introduction. And that's, you know, I appreciate you bringing me on, Greg, and I'm happy to come on if you want me to come on again at a later time. I don't know how much longer I'll be doing this because it looks like they're trying to cut me off.
Well, hopefully they won't. And I would love to do this again sometime, probably in early September. We'll see what's happened between now and then. I did just look up on my phone when the fall equinox is, and it is September 23rd, right in that window. So that's just another layer, another connection. But yeah, we will definitely have to talk around that time. Very cool, man. Well, thanks again for your time. My mind is thoroughly blown. Keep fighting the good fight, and hopefully we can do this again before that inevitable overrun of the Saturnian demon army.
All right, my friend. Well, I want to say God bless to you, and I don't want anyone to walk away in fear. My mission in life is to encourage people to turn to God, because that's the answer.
Well, thanks again, man. I will let you go. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. God bless you.
All right. There we have it, people. Damn, I thought that was great. I was so happy to get to talk about Saturn and the Electric Universe model again. I love the various theories in that realm, and I still want to get the real Thunderbolt Project guys on the show. If you're interested in that happening, please help me get them on here. I thought Anthony did a great job of incorporating that stuff into his material too, and I thought it was all fascinating, but of course, a lot of listeners might not resonate with that Christian lens Anthony looks through. It's no secret that I don't, but I can cut around that in my own mind and still get a lot out of his material. I'm a big boy. But anything about Saturn or technology and magic, I get a little bit giddy for. So of course, if you want to hear more, check out the Plus Show. What was in the Plus Show? Well, we talked about the channeling of complex multidimensional mathematics, programs that are creating synthetic DNA, the transhumanist part of the puzzle, third strand DNA, mandatory vaccinations, Google's role in the agenda, the LHC as a Nazi Bell 2.0, the time component, the 432 Hz tuning, and the musical frequency component of this, storing data in synthetic diamonds, and I'm sure a whole bunch of other things that I forgot, but quite a good show. Crow level good, I would say. And of course, Crow also has a third piece out for THC. I'll be putting it up right after this episode. You can find that on either of the websites, the free or the plus. So far, I think they're really great and interesting. I think I'm going to have him on THC to talk about the first 5 articles when they come out, and then possibly again after the second 5 articles come out. I think most people would be happy to hear that. It's an audio show, so it's a little weird that I'm telling you to go and read stuff. And of course, the next episode will be the 5th of the month, so get any donations in for the Money Bomb. We will have a winner of about $300. I don't think I ever played the message from the last guy, but he did eventually get back to me and claim the bomb. But please, if you are donating, keep an eye on your email towards the end of the month. It's kind of the only way I can reach you, because I'm not going to be renting a minivan to show up on your doorstep with a dozen balloons and a giant check. But like I had mentioned, I do have a show I'm going to be putting out as extra rather than part of the regular roster, because I just didn't think it went as planned and maybe it was a weak point. But then I already did record the first show for May, and I am psyched about that one. So I think we've been on a pretty good stride lately, and I hope to keep that up. I've got some various conspiracy shows planned, a couple returning guests, and even though I don't really have anything on the books right now in terms of magic, I would love to swing back into doing a few on personal magic again. I haven't forgotten about the people that really like that stuff. Again, if you do sign up for Plus, we have a new forum there. I've read a lot of great threads already. I'm working on getting a couple moderators for it. Contact me if you have a history of that kind of thing and would like to help out. I will give you Plus for free as long as you help moderate those forums, which apparently won't be much longer than the fall equinox if Anthony's time frame ends up being accurate. And I do think it's interesting that so much of the transhumanist technology Anthony talks about seems to be the real embodiment of Ultron in the new Avengers movie. And if you saw Iron Man 3, where in the movie they had Ben Kingsley's character being an actor playing a fake terrorist fronting for a corporation, you would realize, you know, these movies, huge blockbusters, owned now by Disney, produced by people in the big club. Maybe coincidence, maybe chosen because these are the flavor of the week kind of issues, maybe because transhumanism is a trend now, or maybe it's foreshadowing something down the road. Gotta watch that release date too, May 1st. Also, if you remember Carrie Cassidy's episode from a few weeks back, maybe a couple months back actually now, we gotta watch this new Jurassic Park movie and see how the raptor aliens are portrayed. See if their little PR campaign works out. Well, I'm not buying it. Raptors, you're bad. But thanks for listening, guys. I'm getting out of here. I'll see you real soon. Just a few days left in the month. Until then, I have done my part. Your move, technological three-strand DNA husks for the satanic Saturn army of Ultron. Your frickin' move.
It's like to be a rainmaker. I wonder what it's like to know that I made the rain. I saw it in boxes with little yellow tags on everyone. And you can come and see them when I'm done. I'm done.
be a superhero. I wonder where I'd go if I could fly around downtown, yeah. From some other planet, I'd get this funky high on the yellow sun. Boy, I bet my friends will all be stunned. They're stunned. Be the head honcho. I wonder what I'd do if they just did all what I said. I'd shout out an order. I think we're on this mayhem me song. Boy, don't make me wanna change my tone.
Of your melted mind, consider this: the high quality commercial-free show you just enjoyed is what we call THC free. But you can spend twice as much time with Greg Carlwood and all his great guests by becoming a member of the Higher Side Chats Elite for just $5, and you'll get the 5 extended 2-hour episodes that come out each month. Because an honest, open-minded, and uncensored exploration into the fringe will never be brought to you by your corporate overlords, but rather must be funded by the loyal listeners willing to take that ride. So join at thehiresidechatsplus.com, and on top of twice as much show, get your own easy-to-use RSS feed URL for convenient listening on any device. Suggest guests on your member profile, comb through the archives of all the ones you missed, and continue the conversation even further on the new THC Plus Forum, where you can scratch that higher side itch in between shows with the rest of us and hold your head up high, knowing that your subscription supports a show you love, produces the free version for everyone else, and stands as a small act of rebellion against those nefarious puppet masters of the power pyramid. Treat yourself. It's time.